and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is the CBS News World News Roundup, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Deborah Rodriguez. Both Democrats and some Republicans are taken aback at President-elect Trump's pick to head the Justice Department. CBS's Linda Kenyon has our top story.
He's now a former Republican congressman from Florida. Matt Gaetz resigned from Congress hours after he was named as the president-elect's choice for attorney general. His resignation makes a House Ethics Committee investigation against him effectively dead. The committee had been scheduled to vote Friday on releasing its ethics report on Gaetz. The committee investigated the Trump loyalist on allegations including sexual misconduct and illicit drug use, allegations he has denied. Gaetz still has to face Senate confirmation to become Attorney General. Linda Kenyon, CBS News, Washington.
Critics also speaking out on Mr. Trump's selection of former Democrat Tulsi Gabbard as National Intelligence Director. Former Ambassador to the African Union, John Simon.
How can you have someone who has shown herself to be so irresponsible from a national security point of view sitting in the Situation Room during a National Security Council meeting, which is where she will be?
The man the president elects tapped to head a new Department of Government Efficiency accompanied Mr. Trump to Washington, correspondent Scott McFarlane.
Republicans gave Elon Musk a standing ovation when Trump appeared before the House Republican Conference. That should give you an indication of their thoughts on Elon Musk and how much they will champion whatever he does with this Department of Governmental streamlining.
There's new condemnation of Israel over the war next door.
Human Rights Watch says Israel is to blame for forcing displacement of people in Gaza, saying Israel is not evacuating people safely.
The Israeli authorities have been committing multiple acts of forced displacement, which amount to crimes against humanity in Gaza since October 2023.
The group's Nadia Hardman says they've given Israeli authorities their findings. Matt Piper, CBS News.
More people are going without medication for a dangerous health condition. Here's CBS's Michael George.
More than half of people with diabetes aren't receiving treatment. A worldwide study by The Lancet found among the more than 800 million diabetics worldwide, treatment rates are dangerously low, especially in low and middle income countries. The number of people with diabetes worldwide has quadrupled since 1990.
Neighbors say they'd been smelling weird odors coming from an old food coloring factory in Louisville, Kentucky, years before it exploded this week. Two workers were killed, 11 others injured. People who live nearby say they complained to both the company and local officials. The cause of the blast is still under investigation. S&P futures are up 7. This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
James here, host of Unlabeled, your 90s mixtape, every Sunday from 8 to 9 on WFHR. It's your weekly dose of music, nostalgia, and pop culture exclusively on locally grown radio.
Entertainment Beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. When it comes to films opening wide this weekend, it's a bit quiet, sort of like the calm before the storm. All eyes are on next week's openers, which will showcase Barbenheimer 2.0 or Glicked, which is Wicked, and Gladiator 2. But there is one film opening wide this week, and it follows a new trend of badass Santa movies. Red One stars Dwayne The Rock Johnson, Chris Evans, J.K. Simmons, and the awesome Bonnie Hunt. Johnson plays the head of security at the North Pole and teams up with bounty hunter Evans to find Santa Claus, who has been kidnapped. It's usually an inside job. The first suspect would be Mrs. Claus. Red One is getting less than 40% on Rotten Tomatoes, but don't let that stop you. It looks like pure holiday fun, and at PG-13, it's fun for the whole family. The Bruce Willis film, The Fifth Element, is getting a re-release this weekend, but in a limited capacity. The film is from 1997 and also stars Ian Holm, Gary Oldman, and Chris Tucker. If you feel like staying home, new movies to stream include Megalopolis, Saturday Night, or Michael Keaton's Goodrich. Let's go to the movies. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Bucks win a thriller. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Bucks were down by 18, but came roaring back to force overtime on the way to a 127-120 win over the Pistons last night in Milwaukee. The Bucks were shorthanded. Doc Rivers.
No Dame, no Chris Middleton, no Bobby Portis. So we're down to one living point guard on our team.
Giannis finished the night with 59 points and talked about what he told the younger players filling in.
You know, don't take these moments for granted. It's easy for me to kind of fold and say, oh, guys are out. But no. We at the end of the day, you are here to do a job, which is compete.
NFL, the Packers face the Bears in Chicago Sunday. I asked Lucas Van Ness, who's going to replace Preston Smith on defense after he was traded to the Steelers.
Regardless who's here, it's always been a next up mentality. Whether it's myself, Mosby, Cogs, JJ, we're all ready just to kind of fill in and help where we can. And that still stays the same.
That's Packers defensive end Lucas Van Ness with Sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
It is going to be partly to mostly cloudy today with a high of 52 this afternoon. The wind will be north at 5 to 15. Tonight, mid to upper 30s. Tomorrow, partly cloudy, low to mid 50s. Then on Saturday, partly to mostly cloudy with a high in the mid to upper 50s. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Currently, it's 42.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome Shannon Simon from Cedar Crest Ice Cream, who will help us make our popcorn pick of the week. Then Susan Kaya-Schlusser from the Wisconsin Historical Society joins me, followed by filmmaker Nathan Deming.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8. You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR.
Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine. Good day, sunshine. I need to laugh. And when the sun.
Yes, good morning. I don't know if the sun's out yet. It wasn't when I got out this morning. It should be out later. We got Brittany Merlot will tell us all about whether how much sun we're getting today. You're listening to Civic Media Mornings. Pat Kreitlow's off this week. He'll be back Monday with his Up North News Radio. Meantime, I'm Matt Rothschild sitting in here with my guest co-host Angela Lang of Black Leaders Organizing for Communities. You can join our conversation at 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. We'd love to hear from you about anything we've been talking about, anything that's on your mind politically. I'll even take calls about birds since we had Brian Brady from the DNR, the best birder in Wisconsin, talking about crossbills of northern finch that's coming into Wisconsin all the way down to Bermuda. He said that was crazy.
It was interesting. As a non-bird watcher myself, I'm like, I'm learning a lot this early in the morning.
I had no idea they came down to Bermuda. Yeah. There's also red crossbills. It's another part of that finch family. Also, evening grosbeaks, they come down from Canada. You see them a lot. I've seen them up in Boulder Junction, for instance, and they're up in the Washburn-Bayfield area. And their cousins, pine grosbeaks, which are pink. Evening grosbeaks are brown and yellowish-green. Huge beaks, of course, by the name. And pine grosbeaks are pink. They're all beautiful. Rarely get to see them down here in Dane County. Sometimes we'll see little finches like pine siskins or red poles. But I'm just geeking out here on birds, and let's get to the weather. We've got Brittany Merlot, who I've been looking forward to hearing because I admire the way you do the weather all the time. Brittany, what do you have in store for us?
Oh, thank you so much, Matt, first and foremost, and good morning, everyone. Gotta love the day, starting off with some bird talk. Yeah. Huge bald eagle fan myself. I used to have those Wisconsin plates to, you know, for the endangered resources and stuff like that. But
and they've made a great comeback here in Wisconsin. I mean, we see them. I see them all over the state. They're here in Dane County. You know, when I'm driving around the state, especially up north, I even see more of them.
Highway 53. I call that Bald Eagle Highway. You're guaranteed to see one.
There you go.
Oh, gosh. Well, you're not going to see the sun today. I'm so sorry for that bad news. Just got to drop it on there first.
Well, Brittany, thanks a lot. Good talking to you. Bye-bye now.
Okay, thanks. Love you, too. Oh, I know. I wish. But those clouds are sticking around hardcore today. We still have a little bit of light rain in central Wisconsin. A little bit of light drizzle will linger through late morning on the eastern areas of the state. And those clouds just stuck here. Highs today, though, still nice and mild. I mean, we're already starting off in some areas. Kenosha, you're at 54 degrees. That is warmer than your average high. And it's, you know, 7 in the morning. So we are going to be hitting those mid-50s today across the state. Some low 50s further north. And a little bit of patchy fog mixed in there as well. So a dreary kind of day ahead. But we've got the sunshine on tap for tomorrow. Plenty of it. and staying on those warm temperatures. They're stuck here with us the entire weekend and to start off next week too before some major changes happen. There's a pretty big system brewing for early next week that could fling our first snowfall statewide by Wednesday.
Oh, there's a four-letter word.
I swore. I know. Got to bleep me out.
But it's been ridiculously warm out. This is global warming. Angela was talking about global warming in the last hour. October, do you have the data yet as to whether that was the warmest October we've had in Wisconsin?
Not out just yet, but I'll say it's probably right up there. Top five would be my guess. Absolutely. I've just noticed in Wisconsin alone, just looking at our state, more and more and more am I saying we're breaking records. We've got this massive heat wave. I feel like I am barely saying some below average temperatures. Oh, a record low? I can't even remember the last time I said that.
Yeah, we don't get that a lot. Brittany, give us a little bit of background how you got into this weather business.
Oh, goodness. It turned from a fear to a passion. So I actually started off as a kid. We were all watching this crazy storm hit our cousin's house, and it was an F5 tornado that completely leveled it.
Where was that?
This was in Plainfield, Illinois in 91. So I was a little one. Saw this about 15, 20 minutes later. I mean, of course, our family rushed over there to see what's going on, help clean up, see if they're okay. And oh gosh, to see that kind of devastation at such a young age, I grew up terrified every time the meteorologist would come on TV or that crawl would go across. I would grab everything and run in the basement and hide. And I mean, this went on for a while, I have to be honest with you. And I needed to turn that fear into education. I needed to learn about it so that I could face it. And so that's what I started to do, was take a bunch of classes, got addicted, honestly. Started chasing tornadoes all across the country with amazing professors, learned so much about climatology as well as meteorology. And I'll tell you what, I'm hooked now. There's no way.
So you were a storm chaser. What was that like?
Ups and downs. You know, you're learning so much. You're so interested. You're watching the textbook actually form out in real life in front of your eyes. You're so excited. That tornado happens, touches down, and all of a sudden your emotions flip. Uh-oh, now it's an emergency. Now it's headed towards a town. Now we have to go help. Now we have to recover and, you know, clean up devastation and save people. It's a roller coaster of emotions. But it's
Have you ever been in a situation where you thought you just got a little too close to that storm and you were in danger?
Absolutely. It was South Dakota, Bowdoin, South Dakota. I think it was in 2021 or something like that. It was an F4 wedge, you know, those big, massive ones, the textbook picture, woo, scary ones. We were too close to it. We were in between the hail core, which had softball size hail, which would have punched out every single window and probably hurt us. And then the tornado, and our radar went out because cell service was so terrible. We didn't know what to do. We just kind of sat there and the van kind of picked up a little, skidded, and that was the worst of it. We were all, but I'll tell
it's like
you,
they should make a movie called maybe they can make a movie called, I don't know, Twister.
Ooh, I loved that movie as a kid. The original one, I loved it.
I saw it in the theater. I did not see the second one.
Oh, you guys, I thought we were friends. You didn't.
I know. I need to. It's on my list.
I didn't see the second one either. I saw the first one.
Well, all three of you need to see it, and then you need to call me right after.
Got it.
Done and done, I guess. As always, Matt, we weren't able to get to this yesterday because we had some technical difficulties, but our friend Rob in Tigerton is just reporting, good morning from Tigerton. It's cloudy with rain, 42 degrees. We picked up 0.36 inches of rain overnight. I love your show, and I love civic class in school. So thanks, as always, Rob from Tigerton, to being getting in touch with us. You can see if you're on the live stream, you can see he's got a picture with Kristen Lyerly, who's amazing. So,
yes,
he's our regular. He always gives us the weather report from Tigerton.
Love that.
He is the best. Yeah. Such a sweetheart, too, honestly.
And we've gotten a lot of rain. I mean, I heard you yesterday, Brittany, saying, you know, we used to be in drought, and all of a sudden we've had more rain than in almost any year. That's a bit of a paradox.
Yeah, it really is. I think it has a lot to do with the fact that we're coming out of a strong El Nino, kind of in an end zone neutral phase, and now that weak La Nina is starting to pick up. So it's shifting our jet streams a little bit, sending a little bit more moisture, and we need that. So I do know, I think 14% of the state, I believe, is still in a severe drought, far, far north, but central Wisconsin, huge improvements. And after this system headed our way next week, I think we'll be good to go.
Are we supposed to get a lot of snow? Are you looking at a lot of snow next week?
Well, it's a little far out to say snow totals. I hate doing that because the models always want to give it a ton.
Sure.
But a good chance for at least 1 to 4 inches across the entire state. And then obviously heavier amounts, maybe half a foot to a foot in far, far north and west portions. So we'll see. Of course, this is a very far out forecast. Don't hold me to that one, you guys. But it's coming. It's coming.
So you know, sometimes... Sometimes people try to make predictions of like, oh, it's been, you know, such a weird fall. Does this mean we're going to be in for a really rough winter? Or does, you know, kind of the mild temperatures now imply that it's going to be a mild winter? What are you thinking?
You know, I'm thinking we've got two things going on. We've got our shifting El Nino to La Nina. We've also got another pattern. It's called the AO. It's the one that brings us the cold snaps. That one has a lot to do with the weather here in Wisconsin. And then you've got climate change on top of that. You know, when you mix all three things together, I think we are, a La Nina year usually means colder and snowier. I don't think we're going to be below average colder. I think we're going to probably sit average because we've been trending above average. Yes, it's the El Nino, but yes, you've got climate change. So you put those two things on top of a weak La Nina. I think we're just going to sit average this year, which would be better than last year. Colder and a little bit snowier. Yeah, me too.
But some of that snow could be heavier if the temperature's a little bit warmer.
That's the thing. And our overnight lows are the things that are warming the most, which is when our snowfall usually hits. And if we're going to get more icing or raining events, that's harder to drive in and more concerning.
So if you're listening, you should get your shovel ready. Make sure you get a decent shovel. I got to go to the hardware store and get a new one. I damaged one last year too much. Get your salt and your sand and your gloves and your hats.
Mm-hmm. Snow tires. Coming.
Yes, snow tires. If you do that, I don't do that. Maybe I should.
Or don't do any of that stuff and just stay inside and wait until April. It's fine. You're fine. We're fine. It's fine.
It's good.
I like a little snow as long as I'm not driving.
Yeah.
It's beautiful, right? Like, it's beautiful the way it sticks. I love the first snowfall, the way it sticks to the trees, and it just like looks beautiful. And if you have the privilege to be in a warm bed with cozy slippers and hot chocolate,
yes,
I love winter for that. I'm not a winter sports person. I don't go out if it's cold. Don't ask me to go anywhere. I like to watch the beauty from the comfort of my warm bed.
But you found the positive, and that's the thing. Once the leaves are gone, the grass is dead, give me something pretty, and it's snow.
Exactly. That was a beautiful poem there, Brittany Merlot.
Well, thank you, Greg.
And I like a fire in the fireplace. We have an old-fashioned fireplace, stone fireplace, and I actually chop my own firewood, so that's just kind of fun. And
I love it.
Matt Rothschild, man of the woods.
Yeah.
Jack.
I love this quote from I visited his place and they called it, it's Thoreau. It's pronounced Thoreau.
Over yourself.
I couldn't believe it either. But anyway, he did say Thoreau. Thoreau said that a fire burns twice as hot if you cut the wood yourself. So it's a mental thing, but I loved it. And it's just something I look forward to. Bringing the wood in, just getting the first fire going,
The
snowfall. So we'll be doing all of that. So any last words for us, Brittany?
No, just try to get through the darker day today. The sun shines on its way tomorrow.
Well, thanks so much. Yeah, I'll wait for the sun this weekend. I need it. Brittany Merlot, meteorologist for Civic Media. We'll be right back on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Good. She knows she's looking fine. I'm so proud to know that she is mine. Good day, sunshine. 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 Good day, sunshine.
This is locally grown radio, WFHR.
The Morning Show on WFHR. It's serious comedy.
The top-selling Halloween candies in every state over the past 17 years.
Oh, nicely done, Melissa. I'm not sure.
What, were you clearing your throat? What was that?
It was a macabre kind of.
It
like,
really was.
Why the 17 years? That seems a little.
That's arbitrary.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Candystore.com.
When they started making Halloween candy, guys.
Oh yeah,
17 that's years. Definitely 17 years ago.
Weekdays from 8 to 10.
Data shows that after a child turns 9 in foster care,
they are much less likely to be adopted. But the Dave Thomas Foundation for Adoption believes every child is adoptable.
Families, if you're able to let your hair down a little bit, there's a lot to learn from teenagers.
The clock is ticking for teens at risk of aging out of foster care. Learn how you can help at DaveThomasFoundation.org.
Victor deployed for the first time to Afghanistan in 2003. At 4 in the morning, my phone rang. They said, "I regret to inform you that your husband was wounded in action." Victor sustained a moderate traumatic brain injury. I was doing school full-time, and I was also then caring for Victor. One of the most important elements of caregiving is taking care of yourself. I just didn't want to forget that I also had goals and that I also had a life. What I did is I challenged Victor to meet me halfway. There are almost 6 million military and veteran caregivers across the nation. We have our own journey, and we can fulfill that journey at the same time that we are helping our loved one.
Visit aarp.org/caregiving for a free military veteran's guide to navigate your caregiving journey and better care for your loved one and yourself. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, home for the Todd Allball Show.
Good morning. Welcome back to Civic Media Mornings. Pat Breitlow's off this week. He'll be back Monday with his Up North News Radio. Meantime, I'm Matt Rothschild sitting in here with my guest co-host Angela Lang of Black Leaders Organizing for Communities. And we're delighted to have as our guest for this next segment, Scott Spector, who was Tammy Baldwin's campaign manager. Scott, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. I've been wanting to talk to you. First of all, congratulations on your victory.
Yes.
And that victory was a ray of sunshine for those of us here in Wisconsin. We were worried. We were worried because it couldn't have been easy with especially the disgusting ads that Hubdy was running against Tammy Baldwin and how rude he was during that debate. And he called her a liar probably 25 times. It was appalling. I mean, it was a poor Trump imitation, but that's where we are, I guess, in politics right now. But, has he conceded yet anyway? I saw yesterday he said he lost, but he hasn't conceded yet. What's up with that?
So.
The senator's phone is on and ready for the phone call, but no phone call has come yet. Instead of conceding and doing the right thing, Eric Hovde continues to lie about the outcome of the election, raise dubious doubts about what happened, and undermine the fairness of our election. So the right thing for him to do is to concede, but unfortunately has not done that yet.
A real class act, start to finish, that guy. Holy smokes.
Clearly.
I've worked for the senator for over 20 years, and I've seen a lot, and I've seen a lot of attacks against her. She's definitely a trailblazer who has faced a lot of criticisms over the year. However, I have never seen the level of lies and attacks that Eric Hovde raised against her. And thankfully, the people of Wisconsin saw through that. They know who Tammy is. They know what she's done for the state. And they disregarded his lies and his attacks. But they were really nasty and beyond the pale and beyond what I've ever seen in my years of working with the senator.
Really disreputable. Really hideous. Not Wisconsin nice by any stretch.
He's not from here, so he doesn't understand the Wisconsin nice.
He doesn't get Wisconsin nice anymore. When you were out in Southern California all the time. But I think you're right, Scott. I had the same theory about Tammy Baldwin, that she was going to win regardless of these hideous ads, because she's been around the state over and over again, and she's met with everybody. And when people meet her, they love her. She's a tremendous person. She's really smart. She's really kind. She listens. Her staff gets things done. Her staff really delivers. And Tammy Baldwin has been a great representative for us here in Wisconsin. So make sure you give the senator my best. I'm an admirer of her. And she did better than Kamala Harris by maybe close to 60,000 votes, Scott. What do you attribute that to?
Yeah, she did outperform the top of the ticket by about 60,000 votes. You know, look, Tanya Baldwin shows up, she listens, and she delivers. And it's not just about the election year. It is about the full 6 years of her term where she travels around the state to rural parts of the state, to urban parts of the state, to the north, to the south, everywhere in the state. She shows up and she listens and she delivers. And so whether that is bringing in funding to build a new hospital in Monroe, whether that is showing up in Superior to help redevelop the Blotnick Bridge, or showing up in Madison and Milwaukee and delivering. And people know that she will be there for them, that she will go to Washington, she will fight for them. And I think that it is that the hard work, honestly, that she puts in time and time again, day after day, year after year, that people know and respect. And I think that makes the difference, is that people know what they get from Tanya Baldwin. And I think that that carried the day last Tuesday.
She's also not a glory seeker. I mean, she's not out there doing publicity stunts all the time. She's just doing the hard work and getting stuff done. And I admire that about her.
That's what I've told a lot of folks. I'm like, she's not the one to be the most out there. Look at what I've done. She just quietly does the work and quietly listens. Quick question, not to kind of like harp on this man, but understanding that he has not conceded, her opponent, and understanding that this moment that we're in, you know, democracy is very, very fragile. Let's just say that. And him not conceding, I think, speaks to a broader testament about our democracy and upholding the will of the people. And so with that kind of lingering, how do you think the senator is approaching kind of this term in Washington under the political dynamics that we're in, whether it's her own opponent, you know, trying to question and deny election results? And then we also understand democracy being more fragile as a whole. So I'm just curious how the senator is thinking about this upcoming term for her.
Yeah, I think the first thing is just talking about what Eric Hovde is saying. He, in a video, a 4-minute meandering video 2 days ago, raised questions about what happened in Milwaukee. He talked about the turnout in Milwaukee. We should be celebrating the turnout. We should be celebrating when people turn out to vote, not questioning their integrity. And by the way, in speaking of it, there was high turnout across the state. It wasn't just in Milwaukee. We had high turnout in the Milwaukee suburbs. We had high turnout in the rural parts of the state, where we had over 100% turnout because we have same day voter registration. Eric Hovde is not raising questions about the high turnout in areas of state that went for him. He's only questioning high turnout in parts of the state, specifically in Milwaukee. And so it's no surprise that he is doing that. And it's really a shame and not in character with what we should be doing. But I think the senator is going to continue to be that voice, continuing to shine the light on Wisconsin, and to make sure that she is fighting for Wisconsin and everybody in Wisconsin, regardless of who they voted for. She will be, the Democrats will be in the minority. But as a senator, there's a lot of power, there's a lot of responsibility, and there's still a lot that she can deliver. Tammy has been in the minority before in the Senate, and I think having her there is going to mean a lot for us in Wisconsin.
Scott Spector, you've been running campaigns for years. You've been studying politics for decades. Now, the Democratic Party is doing a lot of self-reflection or self-criticism. What is the lesson you're taking from Trump's victory here? What should the Democrats be doing?
I think the first thing, especially for us here in Wisconsin, is we have close elections here in Wisconsin. This is what we do. My first campaign in Wisconsin was in 2000, where Al Gore won the state by less than 10,000 votes. The same thing was true in 2004, 2016, 2020, 2022, and now 2024. We have close elections in Wisconsin. So I think before we all decide that the Democratic brand is broke and the party needs to start from scratch, we need to look at the fact that if 200,000 votes change in three states, that Kamala Harris is the president of the United States of America. So on the one hand, I don't think this calls for wholesale change and throw everything out and start again. But I do think that there are things that we can do better. I think that we take things for granted.
If you could just hang on, Scott, and come back after the break, we'll see what the Democrats can do better. You're listening to Civic Media Mornings. We'll be right back.
Locally grown radio, WFHR.
The 2024 Lights of Love tree lighting ceremony begins at 5:30 p.m. on November 20th. Join us or listen from home on WFHR 97.5 FM.
Recently, the American Angus Association hosted their national convention, where one Wisconsin farmer took home a pristine honor. I'm Ben Jarbo with the Midwest Farm Report, and with me is Cody Quam of Marta Farms out of Lodi, Wisconsin, and he was able to take home the Young Breeder of the Year award. And he's here to explain what it meant to him and his family, and how it felt to be able to take home this honor. We'll have that story right after this.
Farming is full of up and downs, but with the right tools, you can navigate any cycle. Join Compeer Financial's Grain Vantage webinar on December 4th from 9 to noon. Hear from ag industry pros like me, Rob Sharkey, during this free virtual event. Leave with real-world strategies to help you manage risk and explore opportunities in today's market. Visit compeer.com/grainvantage to sign up. The Grain Vantage webinar, helping you take control of your farm's financial future.
Welcome back. I'm Ben Jarbo with the Midwest Farm Report, and now here's Cody Quam explaining how it felt to win the Young Angus Breeder of the Year.
It was an amazing honor to be recognized amongst the talented and hardworking people of the Angus industry. To be recognized as Young Producer of the Year, Young Breeder of the Year, it was actually very, very humbling and very, I guess, rewarding to know that all the work you try and do and keep your nose to the grindstone actually gets recognized once in a while.
Quam says they don't do the work they do for the awards, but rather to help further the Angus industry. From the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Ben Jarbo, and we'll take a look at some agriculture news right after this.
The Wisconsin Agribusiness Classic is Wisconsin's premier agribusiness industry event, drawing interest and participation from all segments of the industry throughout the Midwestern states. Mark January 13th and 14th down on your calendar to be at the Kalahari Resort and Convention Center in Wisconsin Dells. The depth of coverage and exhibits provided during the conference makes it clear why the Wisconsin Agribusiness Classic is Wisconsin's premier industry event. For more information or to register, visit wiagribusiness.org.
Welcome back. I'm Ben Jarbo with the Midwest Farm Report, and now let's take a look at some agriculture news. The University of Wisconsin-Platteville Collegiate Crops team won first place overall at their regional crops contest in Brookings, South Dakota. And at this contest, they are judged on plant and seed identification, commercial grain grading, and seed analysis. Senator Tammy Baldwin also announced that Wisconsin will receive over $3.5 million in federal funding aimed to strengthen the fertilizer production to support Wisconsin agriculture and to boost productivity, which in turn will boost Wisconsin agriculture's profitability. From the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Ben Jarbo.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
It is going to be partly to mostly cloudy today with a high of 52 this afternoon. The wind will be north at 5 to 15. Tonight, mid to upper 30s. Tomorrow, partly cloudy, low to mid 50s. Then on Saturday, partly to mostly cloudy with a high in the mid to upper 50s. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Currently, it's 42.
What I know about courage, I learned from my adoptive mom. She said sometimes you just gotta hold on and know we'll get through this.
Mom, we are so high up. Hold my hand.
No, you hold my hand.
Here we go.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
It is absolutely disgusting for conservatives to suggest that because someone is poor or struggling, that they lack judgment. If anybody needs morality policing, it's rich folks, for crying out loud, not people who are struggling to put food on the table and keep a roof over their heads.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody, join us next time. We'll take a look at the Trump appointments coming fast and furious out of Washington, D.C., and what's happening closer to home here in Wisconsin. Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
Going old school on me, Greg. Welcome back to Civic Media Mornings. Pat Kreitlow's off this week. He'll be back Monday with his Up North News Radio. I'm Matt Rothschild with my guest co-host Angela Lang of Black Leaders Organizing for Communities. It's been a pleasure being with you, Angela, this morning.
And always. Same here.
Yeah, it's always fun doing this radio stuff. Mm-hmm. We have as our guest right now Scott Spector, who was Tammy Baldwin's campaign manager. And Scott, before the break, you were trying to get into a question that I asked you. What can the Democrats do better? And I didn't want to cut you off because it's an important question. I wanted to give you a chance to answer that and give our listeners your wisdom on this one.
Yeah. So first off, I think it's important to know that these races are tight and Wisconsin was especially tight. And that's just how things are in Wisconsin. So we don't need wholesale change with the party. But I do think it's important for the party to get back to what we do best, which is delivering for people, for working class families, for people who are struggling. And I think for the last couple of years, perhaps we've been denying that people are struggling economically or not showing up and listening and talking to folks where they are and just assuming that we had votes and people were going to vote for us because of past tendencies or because they voted for Democrats in the past. And I think we can't take things for granted. We have to go listen to folks, hear folks when they talk about the concerns they have about the economy, about the direction of our country, and then go and fight for them. I think the Democratic Party has always been the party that fights for working class families. And if we can get back to doing that and show how we're doing that, the Democratic Party is going to be just fine in the long term.
Well, thanks so much, Scott Spector, Tammy Baldwin's campaign manager. I think that's real wise advice. Please have a good day and say hi to the senator for us.
Will do. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Scott.
You know, I'm reminded of a comment that Van Jones made on CNN. He said Democrats, like Scott was saying, Democrats were ignoring the pain that people were in because of inflation, and that the person who coined the term Bidenomics should have to go sit in the corner somewhere.
Agreed. Agreed.
Because, you know, the Trump campaign used Kamala Harris using the term Bidenomics. Yep. It's just a gut punch for folks out there who've seen their real income go down. So that was an issue. I love me some Van Jones, too. Right now, we're joined by Democratic Minority Leader Senator Dianne Hesselbein. Senator, good morning. How are you doing today?
Good morning. Good morning. I'm doing well. How are you, too?
Good. Bright and early. Yeah.
It is bright and early. It is.
Having fun on the Civic Media Radio Network.
And it's, absolutely. You know,
I just think we need these conversations, especially now, and build community and do some morale boosting among our ranks and trying to regather some strength and some will because it was such a devastating week last week. It's time like these that this opportunity that Civic Media affords us is just so crucial. First of all, I want to congratulate you on gaining ground in the state Senate. You were instrumental in that. The state Senate was 22-10 Republican. It's now 18-15. So you gained some ground. How'd you do it?
So I'm going to say, as devastated I was as what happened at the top of the ticket last week, and we all were, we did everything we needed to do. We went for 15. We wanted 15 out of 15 seats. We wanted 5 seats, and we did it. We won. So as much as we were going, oh, my gosh, what's happening at the federal level right now? We were like, we can't. These counts are coming back. We were in a war room probably till 5 in the morning. City of Oshkosh didn't get their count until 7. I think 30 is around when we found out that one of our candidates, Kristen Alfine, won. So it was a long night, a lot of things happening. But take hope in the Senate Democrats. We did it. We went from, like you said, it was 11 to 15. And we are super excited about our chances. We know that with fair maps, we can do so much with our state. And in 2 years, the maps are even better for us than they were this year. So have hope that we will be that blue wall for our state. I hope in 2 years, I hope we get another Democratic governor, whether it's Governor Evers or someone else. But we're coming back, and we're going to come back stronger than ever.
So you think you can flip the Senate in 26?
I know we can.
Oh, that's awesome. And you mentioned Evers. Has he decided whether he's going to run again?
I haven't talked with him about it, so I'm not sure if he's going to run again or not. I know we have a lot of people, if he decides not to, that might be interested. So we'll see what happens.
Who are some of those people?
Oh, I imagine it would be Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez, I don't know what Sarah Godlewski would be interested in. I don't know about Josh Call. Like I said, I haven't had these conversations with them, but we have a lot of people statewide. Certainly State Senator Kelda Roys ran before, so maybe she would be interested in running. I don't know. Honestly, we're just really focused on the state Senate because we're super excited about what 15 means to us. Mm-hmm. And I'll let you know what it means is conversations, collaboration, and maybe compromise. So we are excited that I don't know how the Republican Senate is going to get a bill passed when they still have obstruction of Senator Nass and Senator Jacques in that body. They are going to need Democratic votes to get things done. They needed them last year when we did shared revenue. We did the Milwaukee Brewers bill, and then we did some overhaul of alcohol licensing. They needed our votes then. That is even more true this coming session.
What are some of the things in like the agenda you're hoping for, just ways that you want to be proactive, understanding, you know, that it isn't the majority yet, but what are some of the priorities that you're thinking about?
Well, certainly funding K-12 education. Sometimes I sound like a broken record. I've been saying this since 2012 when I was first elected and Scott Walker was gutting and cutting education. So that's always been a priority, supporting mental health. Childcare counts is huge. And I'm hoping that as these daycares have closed down, that people are contacting their Republican lawmakers in those areas. So those are sort of like, they shouldn't be hard lifts. Of course, right. Medicaid expansion is always near and dear to my heart. We've left $2 billion on the table, over $2 billion on the table by not taking it. And with taking it, we also help our friends and neighbors with good quality healthcare. So those are the things I'm going to continue to fight for. Will we see Medicaid expansion this year? I don't know. Robin Voss has made it pretty darn clear we're not going to. But in 2 years, maybe. Mm-hmm. Maybe.
I mean, funding for K-12 should be an obvious one to get some, you mentioned collaboration and compromise from your colleagues on the Republican side who haven't had to do it since they've had such a majority. Mm-hmm. Look, I mean, they must have seen those referendums too. That, you know, 75% of those school referendums passed. People are recognizing that their schools have been starved by Scott Walker and that Governor Evers hasn't been able to, because of the Republican resistance and their rigged maps in the legislature, haven't been able to give the public schools the funding they need. Is that a possible victory? Do you think that we can redress this imbalance in funding for public schools?
I'm hoping that we can do that. And honestly, if you look at where all the referendums are passing, they're also passing in Republican districts.
Right.
So it's like people are choosing to raise their taxes because the state is holding on to billions in surplus because we've starved our schools for years. So people are like, oh, we have this surplus. Why do you think that is? It's because we haven't funded K-12 education. So if we funded it, I'm betting these people would not have had, these referendums wouldn't have had to happen because the school districts would be better off.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that I think was clear from election night is that education, I think, was a big takeaway. It was a winner for a lot of folks. And I know good friend Francesca Hong had been talking about it. She said the same thing. She was like, I feel like I sound like a broken record, but like education is something that a lot of folks can get behind. And, you know, as someone that lives in Milwaukee, we had our own, you know, referendum earlier in the year, and we've had referendums before. And we've been kind of moved to the conversation of like, hey, voters, you know, tired of having to put this to referendum. Let's talk about why this continues to be. And that burden tends to fall on the Milwaukee voters or the, you know, the local voters. And we got to fix the broken system, I think, at the statewide level. And it's interesting to see some of the players who are anti-referendum. What we say is like, well, if you would have done your job in the legislature, maybe we wouldn't have to be here right now. And so it's interesting that those same folks that are anti-referendum also didn't do their jobs when they were in the legislature at that time, too. So I think, you know, as we continue to kind of talk and do this kind of autopsy report about what happened on Tuesday, I think something that needs to be highlighted and underscored is the importance of education.
Absolutely. And, you know, when people move to Wisconsin, they want good schools. I mean, no matter if you have kids in school or not. I don't have kids in public education, K-12 anymore. But I know when I sell my house, I want to get a good price for it. And I know people move to Wisconsin because of our good schools and our extremely excellent teachers that we have. It is amazing that we were able to attract and retain all these fantastic teachers that really, truly care about our kids. So I'm hoping we can keep that conversation going with the Republicans and maybe they'll have an open ear.
Teachers who were demonized during Act 10, during Scott Walker's counter-revolution, as I call it. I remember a teacher at the Concourse Hotel was being interviewed on TV the night the recall election lost and Walker won. And she just said, you know, why do people in Wisconsin hate their teachers so much? I mean, it was a real gut punch for teachers. But I think people have moved past that now, recognizing the importance of public education. I know that was one of the winning messages for your candidates, Senator Hesselbein. Mm-hmm. What were some other messages that resonated?
Definitely a woman's right to choose. Abortion and reproductive rights was huge, especially when we had two incumbents, Dewey Strobel and Joan Baldwin, who had taken votes for years, not, you know, just horrible votes. So when they would try to say, oh, I didn't really, it's like, we have the receipts, we have your votes, we have your record, and you can't run from that. You know, you can try to play the middle ground on some things, but when we have your votes that you don't even support birth control, that's a problem for you.
Yeah. Do you think, you know, I know that the Supreme Court about, you know, abortion specifically, and, you know, when it comes to reproductive rights, how do you feel your role, right, as minority leader of the caucus in general? What is the role in also making sure that we can actually protect a woman's right to choose? I know it's going before the Supreme Court, and, you know, there's some clips that went viral of some of our own justices. How do you plan also to continue to protect that right, too?
Aren't we fortunate to have those fantastic justices? I think the clip that I saw was Judge Kurofsky and Judge Dallet, right? And I was just, yep. I'm sure they all said great things, but I mean, you know how clips go around.
Those are what I saw too, yeah.
Yeah, it was amazing. I'm just so proud of them. So,
are you kidding me? Was one of the quotes that
I know. And sometimes it's those simple things when you're like, what? What is happening here? So I'm really happy to say that all the people in the state Senate are definitely pro-choice. And so I'm happy about that. I think continuing to have conversations and uplifting voices of people and women who've had to have these necessary procedures, and just make sure, keep talking to my Republican colleagues and say, you know, healthcare is a personal decision. You don't belong in anybody's examining room but your own. I don't want to be in anybody's examining room. Half the time, I don't want to be in my examining room, to be clear. So I don't want to have decisions about anybody else in their healthcare. That's between them and their doctors. Not me.
Do you see a world in the future where we can actually codify those rights through the legislature? And we also know the political landscape, we understand that. But, you know, if we're talking about potentially being in the majority in just a couple years, you know, what does that look like? And hopefully, I'm trying to have hope that some Republicans have a softer heart when it comes to some of these conversations. Do you think that Wisconsin could be in a world where we actually codify those rights?
Maybe in 2 years. I am not as optimistic as you are that any Republican would vote for it, because that would be detrimental to their campaigns and they would be getting challenged from the right. So, and Wisconsin Family Action would be very against that. So I don't think that will happen anytime soon, this next 2 years, right. But after 2 years, possibly, yeah.
Minority Leader Diane Hesselbein, you've been there when Republicans were in huge majorities, and I saw them when I was in the building acting very rudely toward Democrats, as, you know, you guys got no power, and they just would run roughshod over you. This change in the majority, this gain by the Democrats, should change attitudes, at least so that kind of bullying will, I hope, dissipate. How have you survived in such an ugly climate in that building?
I will say being in the Senate is very different than being in the Assembly. And I think that probably comes from the top. I was able to get bills passed last year in the Senate. Now, were they game changers? Were they the ones that I wanted? Was it Medicaid expansion? Anything? No. But it's a little nicer than in the Assembly. I think the bullying happens a lot more in the Assembly than it does in the Senate, which is nice, which is why I'm hopeful that Leader LeMahieu and I, we've always had an open door policy, and we talk about things. We don't agree all the time, not a surprise, but sometimes we try our best.
Well, I wish you all the best in this next session. Senator Diane Hesselbein, Minority Leader of the Dems, will be right back on Civic Media Mornings with Luke Mathers coming around the bend.
Have hope.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
For the hopeless sinner who would hurt all mankind, just to save his own, believe me now. Have pity on those whose chances grow thin. Against the kingdom's throne. So people get ready. There's a train.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, Rapids home of Nightlight with Peach Schwabba. Join our advertising family on WFHR WIRI and see how radio can help improve awareness, revenue, and staffing for your business. I'm Ashley, and it's my mission to help our area businesses thrive. Call me today, 715-496-0710.
It's time for Cards, Cards, Cards. Make your holiday cards stand out from the rest this year with Quality Plus Printing. Create funny, sincere, or photo-based messages for every occasion with Quality Plus Printing for all your cards, cards, cards.
You're an organ donor, right? Here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Heroicdeed.com.
Ho-Chunk Gaming Madison, home of the Big Win and Madison Casino Guru, is transforming guests into winners, making an ordinary day into a big win day is easy with a 95% average payout. And with over 140 daily jackpots, the number of people winning has never been bigger. So what are you waiting for? Escape to Ho-Chunk Gaming Madison for your next big win.
Ho-Chunk Gaming
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Stuart J. Waddles. I've been into like pistachios. Now they sell them shelled. That's probably my favorite movie snack for when I'm at home.
Are you getting paid by Big Nut? I don't know of anybody that has pistachios during a movie.
Listen, I would love to be paid by Big Nut. I could do cough drops during movies if people would pay me.
Yeah, let's redirect here because this could go bad.
Yeah, this guy, I think it already has.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR.
Pat Rothschild here on Civic Media Mornings. Pat Kreitlow is off this week. He'll be back Monday with his Up North News Radio. And I'm here with my guest co-host Angela Lang of Black Leaders Organizing for Communities. Whenever I'm tapped to be a guest host for any show on Civic Media, I immediately send an email to Angela to see if she'll ride
which
along.
I appreciate. These are always fun conversations, so thank you.
Yeah, I have a blast, and I hope you as the listener have been enjoying these conversations that we're having. We're back right now with Luke Mathers, the guy who makes things go here on Civic Media. Luke, you've had to keep the plate spinning here. I wanted to get your take on November 5th. I haven't heard it yet.
Yeah, we're keeping the plates a spinning, that's for sure. It's been an interesting couple of week and a half, I guess, now with Mr. Kreitlow gone. He was very nervous taking this week off, Matt. I don't know when he asked you to fill in, if that was evident to you, but Pat was like, I don't know exactly if this is the smartest decision, seeing how the last presidential electoral counting and all of the things that occurred in 2020 while we were amidst a pandemic seemed to drag on endlessly.
I got his impulse, though. I'm out of town after all this work preparing for the election and the election return. I'm out of here.
Well deserved. And he was he was nervous to leave, but really been great listening to you and Mr. Alba earlier this week filling in. I get to sit down in that chair with Mr. Bach tomorrow. We're going to have some fun as well.
I'm very excited. Very excited.
It's going to be a good time, Greg.
Yeah.
But
so, Luke, let me
initial reactions, Matt, to the election. Sorry.
I've got to get it to you because Angela and I were on, I think it must have been last Friday, on another Civic Media radio show. And it was the most emotional show I've ever done on radio.
Yeah.
We were trying to process what happened. We were practically in tears.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've had a few more days here, so I'm not going to cry on radio today. But I wanted to get your take, Luke, on what the hell happened there and how do we go on?
I think as somebody that consumes a lot of media and does a lot of behind the scenes stuff here at Civic to help put on the shows that we put on. One of my biggest takeaways from last week is Wisconsinites, Americans, all of us are looking for authentic communication. And I think a lot of people just have these assumptions or these expectations that the inevitable will happen, but it doesn't always happen that way. And so there's a lot of hard work that goes into communicating authentically. And it's a large portion of what we're trying to do here at Civic Media is be honest communicators with the way that we view the world and what is going on around us. And I think we would all be a lot better off if we had a Civic Media in every single state, or at least maybe just the swing states. But we'll see. There's going to be a lot more analysis that comes from everything that happened last week in the coming weeks and months. And there's going to be a lot to pay attention to. But the big core takeaway that I'm really seeing is we need to be authentic communicators, and we need to meet people where they are and talk with them about the issues that matter to us and listen to them about what the issues that matter to them.
I do think it was a victory for the right-wing media infrastructure. And those folks have been building that infrastructure not for a year, not for 5 years, not for 10 years, but for decades. And it yielded a tremendous harvest on Election Day. Because they're able to just reinforce their messages through all their echo chambers and get people believing stuff that's hard for me to even wrap my head around. But you're also right, I think, in listening to people. I mean, people were hurting economically and Democrats were bragging about the economy. That was a total paradox, inconsistency, contradiction. Call it what you want. It didn't work. It wasn't good politics. And so we got to get back to that. And I think Bernie's right. You know, I think Bernie was right the morning of the election when he said we got to do more in addressing the issues of working people. And he was right the day after, and he's created a firestorm. But I think we need to look at that firestorm.
Yeah, I think now is the time to be having these conversations. And there was a lot of folks that this past summer, you saw the delay that we were like, oh, we can't have conversations about how old the president is and whether or not he should run for reelection.
Yeah,
and
that was disgraceful.
And I don't, you can't prove something that didn't happen. So we'll never know if there was an open primary once Joe announced that he wasn't going to seek, what would have happened. I think that if you look, though, at the national trends, the places where the Harris-Walz campaign played the most in the swing states, they did a better job at stemming the red wave, if you want to call it that, that we saw nationwide of people upset about the higher prices. It's going to be one of those things now, though, that with a trifecta government, Republicans own this problem. They have to be the ones to show that they can bring down prices now. And I think it's going to be pretty interesting to see how tax cuts for the wealthiest among us are going to address those problems that overwhelmingly voters say are their top line issue. And so I'm interested to see what happens. I'm not going to be a savant. I'm not going to say I know what happens, but we've also seen trickle down economics at play over the last 40 years. And it's not the thing that has addressed higher prices for consumers. So all the more important to be paying attention here at Civic Media, be telling your friends and sharing about the authentic communication that you hear and how you get your information so that we can all be better informed going forward.
So quick shameless plug. Actually, Dan Schaefer and I talked about some of this. We recorded a podcast that came out. So if folks want to continue listening to that and also the role of organizations and groups like Civic Media, which we talked about also yesterday with J-Matt a little bit too. So I think these conversations are happening, and I think Civic Media has a really critical role too.
That was Angela Lang. I want to thank Angela Lang for being my guest host again today. I want to thank Luke Mathers. I want to thank all the guests who were with us. I'm Matt Rothschild. I especially also want to thank Greg Bach for handling all the technological things. Have a good morning, everybody.
This is locally grown radio, WFHR. Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, Civic Media's own Jim Santel, host of Amicus, a law review, joins us at 11:06. All things sports with J.R. Ratcliffe, and this shouldn't be a thing. Join us.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 10.
You're going to need me.
You're going to need us.
All of us.
You're going to need our help with your water, your air, your food.
You're going to need our determination, our compassion, you're going to need the next generation of leaders to face the challenges the future will bring.
And we promise we'll be there when you need us.
Today, 4-H is growing the next generation of leaders. Support us at 4-H.org.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app. This is locally grown radio. WFHR 1320 AM, W248 DE Wisconsin Rapids, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.